From the CBS Bay Area studios, this is KPIX 5 News.
And now it's 6. Emotional moments at a Bay Area airport. The difficult journey for an Afghan-American family who spent weeks living under Taliban rule.
And we're going to sort out where exactly this rain is going to fall from Northern California coming up on Monday. We'll paint the map and get as specific as we can.
CVS pharmacies in California have started to administer COVID-19 booster shots. I'm Max Darrow on the peninsula, and we'll introduce you to some people who decided to get in line today.
I want to safeguard my granddaughter and take whatever I can to keep myself safe.
Former presidential candidate Andrew Yang back in the Bay Area today talking about an idea that is spreading from city to city to city. We will explain.
And good evening. I'm Brian Hackney.
And I'm Juliette Goodrich. New at 6, we begin with an emotional reunion at a Bay Area airport after a long and difficult journey. An Afghan-American family finally back home tonight after spending weeks stranded in Afghanistan under Taliban rule.
KPIX5's Betty Yu live in San Rafael with a homecoming underway this evening. Hey, Betty.
Hi, Brian. That's right. The Zia family arrived just hours ago, and right now they are getting ready to have some cake inside this San Rafael home. It belongs to the founder of the Roots of Peace, and Roots of Peace is a humanitarian nonprofit that right now has several employees in Afghanistan that they're trying to safely bring to the U.S. Ahmad Sayar Zia, he is a Roots of Peace worker and a green card holder. The family had been living in Sacramento, but they went back to Afghanistan to see Zia's family. He brought his wife and children and his American-born daughter, including his American-born daughter, rather. He shared stories with us of his attempts to escape at the airport under Taliban rule. He says he was beaten and turned away several times.
They make the rules, but it's not written, it's not announced for the people. They're announcing through the media that you are leaving anyone with a valid document to leave the country, but they're not doing that in actual. It's just what they are saying to the media.
And Zia there describing the very dangerous situation in Afghanistan. He says right now he's thinking of his friends and colleagues still in Afghanistan about ways to assist them in getting back here to the U.S. He says the only reason he was able to do so was because his daughter is a U.S. citizen. Brian?
Already in San Rafael, that is Betty Yu. Betty, thank you.
Well, on to the fire watch now. Cooler temperatures and also shifting winds could help fire crews get a handle on the Fawn Fire that's north of Redding. Evacuation orders remain near Old Oregon Trail and Interstate 5. The fire, which authorities say was the work of an arsonist, is now over 7,500 acres. The fire has destroyed at least 100 buildings, and containment is up to 10%. And there is a new twist in the fire investigation. Authorities are saying a Palo Alto woman accused of starting the Fawn Fire is now being investigated for other fires in Shasta County and elsewhere in the state. 30-year-old Alexandra Sovernia was charged with arson yesterday. She was arrested after being found in a wooded area near the fire's ignition point. Authorities say she had a lighter in her pocket.
And we'll take a live look outside. Hazier conditions today with more smoke from that wildfire drifting into the Bay Area. Actually, I think it's the smoke from the fires down south drifting into the Bay Area, right?
Yeah. Darren's here to sort it all out for us and a talk of rain.
Yeah, and you know, it can be confusing because we've got fires to the north and to the south. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it on the big picture, you get the overview effect and you can clearly see it's these fires, the Canopy Complex and the Windy Fire, down in the Southern Sierra. Those are the ones putting out the large amounts of smoke that's getting drawn into the Bay Area. The Fawn Fire is right there and the smoke's going the other way. It's really subtle, but it's there if you've got good eyesight. Mm-hmm. Let me show you why we can say it's that one. Because as we put it into the high resolution forecast model, watch the flow in the atmosphere. All the smoke keeps getting pulled up clockwise from that fire, from those two fires, and pulled back towards us. And for the next couple of days, we're just going to kind of be stuck right on the northern edge of the plume of smoke. So the Bay Area Air Quality Management District has extended the air quality advisory through tomorrow. It's supposed to expire today, but it goes through tomorrow. Now, there is very good news and very good reason to believe by Monday, it's a totally different story. We'll talk about that system trying to bring rain here and certainly cleaner air. I'll have that coming up in the forecast, guys. Back to you.
Okay, but since we're mentioning fire on the Fire Watch, fire crews are using backburns to defend some of the state's most ancient trees from that KNP complex fire. In the past 24 hours, the fire has grown about 9,000 acres in Sequoia National Park. Fire crews there are aggressively using dozers to improve ground access. Fire's burned over 42,000 acres, and it has no containment.
COVID booster shots just became much more accessible across the Bay Area. CVS Health is now offering them. KPIX5's Max Darrow joining us live from a CVS in San Carlos to break it all down for us. Hi, Max.
Juliet, we didn't see huge rushes to get the COVID-19 booster shot at the CVS's, but there definitely was interest. There weren't huge lines, but people are interested in getting this booster. We checked online, and we did see that a couple of the CVS spots in the Bay Area that offer the booster ran out of appointment slots for today. We did speak with a couple that got the shots today. They were pretty excited about it. Following the CDC's recent approval, nearly 600 CVS locations across California now offer the Pfizer booster shot to eligible populations. Bruce and Sherry Barber got their booster shots on Saturday at a CVS in San Mateo.
Just to remain safe and to protect my husband and my granddaughter, who isn't old enough yet to get the vaccine, and just basically to keep us as healthy as possible.
Eligible populations include people 65 and older, people who have certain underlying medical conditions, and those who are at exposed risk to COVID-19 due to their occupation.
Yes, it's definitely a good idea for those over 65 in particular.
UCSF infectious disease experts Dr. Peter Chin Hong says people who are eligible should consider getting the booster shot. However, he doesn't think the availability of booster shots will be a huge difference maker in slowing down the pandemic.
I think it's very important, but particularly important for one segment of the population, but probably not the most important thing. I think the most important thing, of course, is to get the first shot regardless, and there 80 million Americans have not been fully vaccinated.
Well, it wasn't packed inside the CVS. Bruce told us they weren't the only ones there.
We stood in line for a few minutes and people backed up behind us, young people as well as elderly.
Bolstered by their boosters, the barbers now feel a little bit better about going about their daily lives.
If you're eligible for the booster, get it.
And if you haven't gotten one yet, your first one yet, please go to the front of the line.
So you're encouraged to make an appointment online if you want to get a booster shot at CVS, but they are trying to handle some walk-ins as well. But this is only for people who did receive the Pfizer vaccine. If you received the J&J one shot or the Moderna vaccine, this booster is not for you just yet.
All right.
Reporting live in San Carlos, Max Darrow, KPIX5.
Good to know, Max. Thank you.
Well, San Jose police are investigating a stabbing that left a man seriously injured. The attack happened about 11:30 last night near West San Carlos and Brooklyn. That's a few miles west of downtown. So far, there is no word on what led up to the attack, and investigators are not saying if they've identified a suspect. And San Francisco police officers went all the way to Lodi to tow a yellow Mustang involved in a sideshow last month. Sideshow roared through the intersection of 6th and Harrison Streets back on August 22nd.
And now at 6, the fight for a universal basic income is showing some progress in Santa Clara County. One South Bay city is moving ahead with a program that's proved successful in Stockton and adopted in Oakland. KPX 5 reporter Wilson Walker is in Mountain View, where a former presidential candidate is leading the charge. Wilson.
Mountain View, one of a number of Bay Area cities moving ahead with a guaranteed basic income program. Now, that was the focus of today's rally. There was also some politics and talk of a different kind of politics.
I think we're seeing good results in other cities, and that's why I felt like it was time for us to try it here. And I hope
with $1 million worth of American Relief Act funds, Mountain View is on its way to becoming the latest city to experiment with a universal basic income. In this case, a $500 monthly payment to a family at or below 30% of the average median income. And the people behind the idea largely credit one person for it.
So I was inspired by Andrew Yang. I was an early Yang ganger, and it was really because of his UBI concept.
We always had the money. And we also now know that people will spend it on food, fuel, keeping a roof over their head.
For the former presidential candidate, this rally seemed a bit like a victory lap in one sense. From Oakland to Marin to Santa Clara County, UBI programs are gaining momentum. State Senator Dave Cortese was on hand to lend his support. And now polling with a 54% approval rating nationwide, this is an idea with a lot of fans.
So it's a thrill to be here to help continue the movement for basic income, which now the majority of Americans know it's common sense.
Universal basic income makes perfect sense. As a matter of fact, it's so obvious that it almost doesn't need explaining.
There is, of course, opposition, and early programs are using grants and philanthropic funds to avoid legal challenges. But supporters say UBI is the future now that it's gaining political support. And as for the subject of politics, Yang also talked about what he calls a system that is leading us to nowhere and the possibility of his launching a third party.
I'm thrilled to be trying to provide a middle ground for Americans who right now, again, aren't seeing themselves represented in our politics because the politics now have become so polarized and extreme on both sides.
As for Mountain View's basic income efforts, they are going to be talking more about that on Tuesday night, specifically which families, and they are going to focus on families, which families they'll be prioritizing for the launch of the program. Here in Mountain View, Wilson Walker, KPIX 5.
New at 6, tomorrow is the final day for the public to weigh in on a plan to begin charging fees at some national park sites in the Bay Area. And KPIX 5's John Ramos explains why, how much, and what people think about it.
The Golden Gate National Recreation Area is part of the National Parks system built for the benefit of the people. But now it looks like the people who actually use the parks are going to be called upon to help contribute to their operation. This is National Public Lands Day, a day when all national parks are free to visit. Baker Beach, with its spectacular view of the Golden Gate Bridge, is always free. But that may not be true for much longer for those who drive here. The GGNRA wants to begin charging $3 per hour, up to $10 per day, to park, which isn't going over so well with those who are used to it being free.
Some people aren't able to afford to even come out, and just think if parking would put another criteria there to where they won't be able to come and enjoy it.
The fees would be charged at parking lots at Baker Beach, China Beach, Stinson Beach, Rodeo Beach, Land's End, Sutro Heights, Navy Memorial, and Fort Cronkite. The park district says it needs the money for basic necessities like trash collection and janitorial services.
We're looking at these fees as a last resort to allow us to recover some of the costs that have dramatically increased as a result of extreme visitation in some areas of the park.
I don't believe them when they say that. I think that a lot of money is squandered.
Donald Haynes says much of the beach cleanup is done by volunteers anyway and thinks the government simply isn't efficient in its spending.
The cost of doing things has gotten way out of hand, and it's way out of proportion to people's basic activities.
He's not alone. Most of the people we spoke to wondered why the park's budget doesn't seem to be able to handle the most basic of expenses.
Like, I'm not really sure where the money goes. I mean, I hope they have good intentions with it, but to know what they're actually doing is he say, she say.
This beach is already pretty clean, so where's the money coming from to keep it clean right now? Where's the extra money going to do to make it better over here?
But Susan Ma thinks it's important to pay to keep things nice.
Change is hard when people are not used to, you know, having to pay, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's worth it. The small price they pay, $5, $10, to me it would be worth it.
The public comment period ends tomorrow, and if approved, would be phased in lot by lot over several years, beginning in mid to late 2022. At Baker Beach, John Ramos, KPIX 5.
Vector control officials in Contra Costa County have discovered a second bird infected with the West Nile virus. The bird was found in San Pablo, and this week officials also found another group of mosquitoes that tested positive for the virus in Oakley. Officials recommend dumping standing water around the home and wearing repellent to keep away the mosquitoes. Since 2005, 74 people in the county have contracted West Nile virus, and two people have died from the disease.
Well, on to happier news. news, get ready for a spooky experience at a Bay Area theme park. Fright Fest returns to Six Flags Discovery Kingdom tonight after a hiatus. At night, guests can walk through haunted attractions. You can even ride a roller coaster with a zombie. The event will run at the Vallejo theme park until October 31st.
All right, on to the Oakland Zoo now. It hosted a brunch for baboons today, and the event is called Brunch for the Wild Bunch. So guests were invited to enter the habitat and leave fresh produce in the baboon enclosure. The animals feasted on all sorts of vegetables like cucumbers and bell peppers. And lots of volunteers there helping out. Looks like fun. And now at 6:30, vigils are taking place ahead of Gabby Petito's funeral tomorrow. Residents in her hometown of Long Island placed lit candles at the base of their driveways to remember the young woman whose disappearance has garnered nationwide attention. Authorities are still searching for her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, after the FBI issued an arrest warrant for him.
Reporter Michael George has the latest on that investigation.
As the manhunt for Gabby Petito's fiancé ramps up, mourners are preparing to pay their respects at her funeral on Sunday. Petito's body was found nearly a week ago in a Wyoming national park. The coroner ruled her death a homicide, but authorities haven't said how she died. Gabby went missing while on a cross-country road trip with Brian Laundrie.
We've just been fighting this morning. Some personal issues.
She appeared to be in distress during a Utah traffic stop last month that followed this 911 call.
We drove by and a gentleman was slapping the girl.
He was slapping her?
Yes, and then we stopped. They ran up and down the sidewalk. He proceeded to hit her, hopped in the car, and they drove off.
CBS's 48 Hours spoke to Petito's close friend.
For the most part, like any other relationship, honestly, ups and downs, and I could see some of the toxic traits.
Laundrie returned home alone in their van after Gabby's family reported her missing. He refused to talk to authorities and then disappeared. Police are searching a massive wildlife preserve near his Florida home.
Terrain's very difficult. Essentially, 75% of it's underwater.
This woman says she drove some 50 miles to post flyers with Petito's photo.
I feel for both parties. I feel for them, and I feel for the lost girl's parents.
On Thursday, federal prosecutors charged Laundrie with debit card fraud, allegedly committed after Petito's disappearance. Authorities say he could be anywhere, even out of the country. Michael George, CBS News.
A $30,000 reward is now being offered for information on the whereabouts of Brian Laundrie. A source close to the family says that he left home on September 14th, leaving his cell phone and his wallet behind.
KPIX 5 morning anchor Len Keyes spoke with CBS correspondent Jerika Duncan about a secondary investigation that has been launched in this case.
And you have that video, which is going to be so crucial as investigators within the Moab Police Department look at that. You know, they opened a formal investigation, they said, to make sure that all policies were done correctly. At this time, they're saying that they believe that things were done appropriately and no one violated any policies. But there have been a lot of people wondering, was there more or something different that police should have done that, you know, could have led to a different result when it comes to the safety of Gabby Petito?
And you can watch the 48-hour special, What Happened to Gabby Petito, tonight at 10 right here on KPIX 5.
Well, the last remaining migrants have cleared out from a makeshift camp along the border near Del Rio, Texas. The Biden administration says border officers encountered about 30,000 migrants in Del Rio in the past month. President Biden faced criticism from his own party for deporting about 10% of the Haitian migrants under Trump-era public health rules. The Homeland Security Secretary says despite an earthquake last month, Haiti is able to receive the migrants. Meanwhile, some Haitian migrants have started arriving at a new shelter in Mexico. Yesterday, Mexico's president says he does not want his country to be an immigrant camp. He also urged the United Nations to intervene in the flow of Haitians to the U.S.-Mexico border.
And taking a live look at the state capitol now, where Governor Newsom has just signed a bill that removes the term alien from state legislation. Instead, lawmakers will use terms like non-citizen or immigrant. In a statement, Governor Newsom said, quote, "This important legislation removes the word alien, which is not only an offensive term for a human being, but for far too long has fueled a divisive and hurtful narrative. By changing this term, we are ensuring California's laws reflect our state's values.
Well, we're learning that a suicide car bomb killed at least 8 people in the capital of Somalia. The blast happened at a checkpoint leading to the presidential palace. An al-Qaeda-linked extremist group has claimed responsibility. Witnesses say a car bomb went off when police stopped a driver for a security check.
City of San Francisco is considering closing JFK Drive in Golden Gate Park to cars permanently. It was something the city did during the pandemic to give people a place to exercise and social distance during the pandemic. KPX5's Devin Feely explains it all.
I support keeping JFK car free. I think it's been a wonderful thing during the pandemic, and it should continue.
Supervisor Matt Haney adding his voice to a growing chorus calling for JFK Drive to stay car-free even once the pandemic is finally over.
A lot of people use it to get to the other side of the city and stuff like that, so cutting it off would obviously create more traffic, so I think that's just the main point.
The city shut down JFK to cars early in the pandemic, a move designed to give people a place to get outside, to exercise, and still maintain social distance. It's become wildly popular with walkers, joggers, and cyclists.
During quarantine and also during COVID, I've been running on the street every single day, and so many pedestrians get hit by cars, and I feel much more safe and comfortable running on this street.
The city is now trying to figure out if the temporary change should become permanent or perhaps revert back to the way it was pre-pandemic. Open on weekdays, closed to cars on weekends. Supervisor Haney says there are issues. Disabled access for one, getting to the museums easily for another. But he believes those are problems that have common sense solutions.
There are, you know, tons of folks who are walking, who are biking, children, families, roller skating. And it's in the middle of a park. It is should be used by people.
Closing JFK to car traffic has been discussed for decades. Haney says it's taken a while and a pandemic to finally arrive at the intersection of city policy and common sense. Devin Feely, KPIX 5.
The city is surveying residents about what they would like to see happen to JFK. A final decision is expected next year.
And I guess that will do it for now.
That will do it for us. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you back here at 11 o'clock.
Until then, the news continues on KPIX.com for now. Good night.
Good night.